The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry with Joe McGill.
Good morning. How are you this morning? I'm Joe McGill and you're listening to the Saturday Supplement. And I hope I find you well wherever you are around the world listening to us on RadioKerry.ie or on the traditional wireless 96 to 98 FM. The weather has changed, hasn't it? It's got a lot cooler now. We're kind of, you really notice now we're into the autumn, but it's a kind of a nice time of year as well when you see the waves as wild as they look during the week. It's kind of beautiful in its own way. Later on in the programme, we're going to hear from our Radio Kerry College broadcasting students. They have done some fantastic pieces, little documentary pieces, if you will, and they kind of feature, I suppose, bygone days of what Kerry was like, and also right up to date to contemporary society. They're wonderful pieces and full of humour as well, so you're not going to want to miss them in the next hour, trust me. Now, it is the first Saturday of the month, so let's not waste any time and let's introduce Dominic Walsh for our monthly In Focus photography slot. Dominic, you're very welcome. How are you?
Good morning to you, Joe. Thank you again for having me on this month, and it's great to be on. And you mentioned the cold weather and the changes in the climate and everything like that. This, Joe, is the best time of the year. This is my favourite time of the year as a photographer. The colours are starting to change. The water, the waves are really rushing with that white foamy water around them and the dark colours underneath them. You can really see things this time of the year, and it's changing. So people need to be getting ready to take their winter forecast, the autumnal forecast now this time of the year. So they should be out there now picking their locations, walking into the woods or wherever they're going to go, and going back in and saying, oh, I had that location picked out, I'm now going to go back and do another location. So it's good to be around.
Yeah, you're a man of the sea, isn't it? Do they call them waves the white horses, or what do they say, you know, on the, when you kind of see the white tips of the waves, that it's rough?
Yes, they
do. Did I imagine it?
They do, you're correct. They call them the white horses, actually, and they call them the waves. And then when the waves are messy around the edge of the beach, they call them, they say they're starting to dump. So when they're just throwing their water off the top, something like that, you know. But look, it's great. I love being out at the beach. It just, you know, it's good for my mental health to be off walking the beach, slow to around and see it all and smell that fresh air. It's fabulous.
Yeah, and the wind, when it's blowing like that in the sea, it really does blow away the cobwebs, and you're so refreshed after it. It's like going for a swim in the ocean. Yeah, it gives you that kind of like being newly born. So it's amazing. Now, so Dominic, as always, we talk about the listeners' photos, and we've got quite a wonderful collection. We also go into your archive later on in the programme, and I'm looking forward to that. But firstly, we look at photos you took in the recent past, and the first one we're going to look at is the Senior County Football Championship Group 3, Round 3, played at Glorious GAA Grounds. The scoreboard keeper places the score on the board while the kids look on. West Kerry Red and the Gael pictured in action during the game. This is a wonderful shot. There's a lot going on here as well, Dominic.
There's a lot going on, and people should look at this, because this is a photograph that was not set up. I was sitting down doing the match, and I just noticed that I could hear the noise of him putting the plates into the scoreboard, and it attracted my attention from a long way off on that. And I looked, and there was this man on a stepladder. There was two young kids passing, and the score at that time was, I think what we have there is we've West Kerry one goal and 1 point, and we've Nagale at four points at that stage, yes, on that. And it was just the fact that I didn't know what was happening. I swung the camera around and I just captured this picture. And it just shows that I went to cover a match, and I did the shots of the match. And then when I turned around, I spotted this. But even though the gentleman is changing the scores on the scoreboard like that, it was the two young kids that were passing that actually made it for me. They're looking up to see what's happening and seeing the score. So like, my advice to people is, when you go to a place, be it whatever you're doing, whether it's a function or a walk or anything like that, you know, always be aware of what's happening around you, because you mightn't spot something, and it could hit you in the face, and it's there.
Yeah, and all the numbers on the ground as well, scattered around the place. It just looks wonderful. These are a rarity now, kind of where you're changing the scoreboard by hand. Most of them, you see, it's someone at the side of the pitch with a remote control and it's digital. Even though, look at this scoreboard, there looks like one side of it used to be digital, but they've gone back to the old tried trusted changing it by hand.
Well, yes, and you are right. There was a digital scoreboard on, let's say, the right-hand side as you're looking at it. But Jeannie McJoe, just about maybe 30 yards away from that scoreboard, if not more, is the sea, the Atlantic Ocean, and the wind and the salt and everything like that. Mm. So for a scoreboard to last out that area like John, it want to be well protected like that, John. Like, with the salt builds up like that, John. It's on. Amazing enough, I was more not interested, but it took me off the kind of a match when I was there sitting up, because I could hear the waves crashing up onto the rocks, and it was absolutely lovely to hear it. So I was kind of sitting down and looking around, and that's how I spotted this.
And you mentioned spot. That's spot photography, isn't it? That's the definition of it.
That's spot news photography is what they call that. Just to let the people know, it's actually the settings that I have on the cameras, the setting I use for matches to get the action, to capture the action. So it's a very fast shutter speed I was using. The shutter speed was 2,500 of a second, which I use normally for sports. The lens is a very big lens. It's a 500mm lens I was using. And the aperture is f5.6. That's the amount of light that goes, that the camera will let in, the lens will let into the camera. The ISO is at 800, and what I have is autofocus lock. When I'm doing matches, I tend to have my camera in autofocus, but what I've done is I spun around to this, zoomed in, got it, locked the focus, and then took the picture.
Excellent. And we have a few listeners' questions emailed into us during the week, so we'll hopefully get to those later on in the programme. You brought a second photo, and of course we profiled it here on Kerry County Council's arts programme, Creative Kingdom, with Kate Kennelly. Culture Night was on Friday the 23rd, I think it was now, and it took place in Tralee and all around this county, but you were in Tralee and you captured this wonderful photo at the Island of Geese, and it's a firestorm show, but you've managed to catch the fire, and to me it looks like a fire snake jumping around in the air. It's absolutely stunning.
It is absolutely. Look, like they've just recently opened up the Island of Geese, and if anybody hasn't seen it to Tralee, and if some people are coming to Tralee from outside, they should pay a visit to the Island of Geese. It's almost alongside the Garda station there. It's the most beautiful location and open space you could find around the town at the moment on that. And what they had was, this was during Culture Night, and I was out covering Culture Night on that, and there was a fire show down in the amphitheatre down there, and I went down to take it. And of course, being the guy that I am, and I'm so well prepared when I go to take pictures, that I forgot my tripod. I'd left it in the car. I did some of the start and I came over. So just let know people how I actually took this. I put the camera on the ground on that. I took it at 3.5 seconds, and the lens I used was a 24-70mm. F-stop was f22. I closed it right down. I wanted a lot of things sharp in this photograph, because the distance from the guy, the fire artists, to the people was quite a lot, so I wanted everything in focus on that. So what I did is just sat down and just watched what was going on, and there was a gentleman, there was actually two gentlemen there dancing with they were almost, how can I explain it? They were like, as if you put tin cans at the end of ropes, and they were spinning them around, if that's the easiest way. There's obviously a more technical term that they would have from it. And they were moving around and going from side to side on that. And as they're moving, because they were dressed in black, the people almost disappear in it. You can see the feet on the ground, and you maybe see the hands there, but the slow motion of it, like that you've captioned, because you've a slow mode in the camera, it's like, as you say, it's a snake going through. You can see the circles, you can see the round. It's just a very unusual shape, and people could try this. You could try this with a flashlight. You don't need to be having any fires or anything like that. You can have two flashlights in your hand, stand out in a late evening. I tend to light that ambient time when the sky is almost dark, as opposed to being very dark, and you can go out, put your camera on the ground if you don't have a tripod on that, or if you've got a mobile phone, you can put it onto slow mode on that and take it and spin around and make shapes with the lights. It's unbelievable, the shapes and designs that you can get out of it.
Yeah, and looking at the photo, and it's up here on Radio Kerry's Facebook page, and it's also in the podcast section of RadioKerry.ie, in Focus with Dominic Walsh. You'll see all the photos we're talking about today. But I had to look again at that photo, because I missed it the first time I opened the photo, and then the second time I opened, I seen there's actually the people doing the fire, because like you said, they're almost like ghosts because you can see through them. It's very hard to kind of explain. They're almost translucent.
It's not that actually translucent. The thing is, because the shutter is open so long, it will take in things that it can see, and but it won't take in things that it can't see. And that's the people that were dressed in black, and they were dancing around the place on that. And it's only when they stand still for a while, you can make out the feet on the ground, because they've stayed still for that moment, and it captures them. But apart from that, you don't see the people. They're actually walking back and forth, and you can see the people behind. It's quite interesting how it works and how you get the finished product. But like, I could have taken it a number of ways. I could have taken it with a chimney in the background, but it would have been a chimney in the background. I could have, and I decided to take with people in the background on that, but I had to be very careful. I wanted to take the people who were good. They didn't realize how good they were, because they were leaning up against the fence and they were actually quite still. If you look through it, some people are blurred and some people are actually sharp on it.
It reminds me actually in Thailand and the islands. This is kind of a regular thing of an evening, and they'd come up when you're eating your dinner and they go, "Hello, the fire show," and then it'd start shortly after that. But you could have 10 people doing a fire show, standing on top of each other, doing pyramids and everything. It's absolutely amazing to see live the talent these people have. But like you say, you wouldn't want to be doing this at home.
No, you would not want to be at home. That's what I'm saying. Pull out the flashlights and LED little lights and that, and you can change the colours of them. You'd be very surprised. You could leave your shutter on a very, very dark night. You could leave it open for nearly 3 minutes. So you could be running left and right and making all these shapes, and you probably would not be seen, but your lights and your shapes would be seen. So it's interesting. It's just the one that I think people should try. And if it's a thing that they have any questions on, please come back next month and we'll talk about them.
Very good. Well, speaking about questions, I'm going to throw one at you now from our listeners. And if you want to ask Dominic a question, if you come to during the month, you can email me, jmcgill@radiokerry.ie. When you go to a shoot, do you take any essential items other than a camera and lens? I can answer that. A sandwich and a flask of tea.
Actually, would you believe it? I have a cooler inside my boot, and I keep some water inside there, and I keep some fruit inside there, and that's with me all the time. But yes, I do bring a lot of other essentials. It's not just about bringing the camera. It's about checking out the weather. It's about knowing where you're going. It's about your footing when you're standing, and it's about how safe you are and keeping your camera equipment dry. Yes, probably the most essential thing that I would probably bring with me actually would be I bring my phone, and if I need to contact anybody like that in case I'm arriving to a location and somebody has gone to a different location, I bring contact numbers for people, I bring a list of what I'm doing, and yes, I always dress to suit what I'm doing. In other words, if I'm going out on a winter's day and I'm taking pictures, I'll dress to that. So it's not all about the camera gear, it's about all the bits and pieces you bring, and I regularly would have a spare set of clothes in my car.
Do you ever wear gloves?
Yes, I do wear gloves.
Would you? And would that not get in the way of the feel or the buttons and the settings and all that? Or are they those fingerless gloves?
I would have fingerless gloves, and what I would do then is two fingers would stick out of it, and I'd work on that, and I'd be working the camera thing on that. Sometimes when it gets very cold, I bring these little things you can get in the outdoor shops, and you just snap them and to heat up, and I put them into the gloves to keep my hands warm, because what happens is if my fingers get cold, I'm snookered on a job, because I can't operate the camera, I can't do things, so I try and keep my hands warm the whole time. And it's very different when you're working during the winter and you're sitting down at a match and your hands are up to eye level or if not above it, and your fingers actually in the space of 15-20 minutes can become quite slow to react and you're trying to push them, so you need to keep yourself warm.
Yeah, because I've commentated on football games and I noticed that as well. Say if you keep your hand up for the microphone, you don't realise it. Whereas if you were just watching the match normally, you could have your hands in your pockets, you'd be moving around, you'd be talking to someone. But you're actually in the same position and you wouldn't even, I'd say, notice yourself getting that cold, and it'd be the same for a photographer sitting in the standing in the same spot, and you kind of have to stay down low as well.
What it does actually, cold is this, it's very unusual, and I know we're straying up the subject now, but when I'm out walking like that, it's very strange. You arrive to a place, you get out of the car, it is cold, you can feel the cold. Then you sit down and you're walking away, you can still feel the cold. But then it comes to the stage where you actually don't feel the cold as much. And that's when the fingers stop working, and that's when you start thinking, you start making mistakes in the settings and that, on that. So you've got to really watch yourself. When you get into that stage, you either got to go away and warm up on that, or just rethink what's happening like that. That's when I go along, then I pop the stuff into the gloves to keep my hands warm and on that, and that's what you have to do.
Very good. Well, we're going to have to throw down the fire here in the studio because I'm after getting very cold all of a sudden.
You're listening to the Saturday Supplement with Joe McGill on Radio Kerry.
Yes, that's what you're listening to. This is the Saturday Supplement. I'm Joe McGill and we have Dominic Walsh with us for his monthly In Focus photography slot. And now we're going to look at your photos that you sent to us. And the theme was Best of Kerry. And the reason we chose this theme, Dominic, was...
because the Best of the Awards were on this week.
The Best of Kerry Awards, they were, and you went along to take photos. So it is a great idea, isn't it, celebrating all we have in this county?
It is, but look, if you look at the pictures, Joe, and you see what's there, it's absolutely fantastic. And again, as I say to people, we're showcasing Kerry around the world because people listen to this online and everything like that, you know, and it's good to see it. And I always reckon it's the local people out there that tend to get the best locations to go and photograph.
Very good. Well, let's get to them. And James Nealon never leaves us down for photos. Meenagahan Pier, Causeway, and Ballyhaig Beach as well. These are great landscape shots. I really like the first one in particular where you see the sea stack.
Yeah, Meenagahan, I go out there quite a lot, actually. It's a lovely place to go out there like that. And you get so many different times of year out there. Like this time of year is going to be nice now because like the water's swelling up and you're getting a little bit wavy water and they'll be crashing around the rocks there. And it's a safe place to go. You can go down there. There's a parking space down there. You can even sit in your car and you can take pictures from a distance there on that, you know. James, what I might have done, James, is as opposed to... I might have come in a little bit more on the sides... and maybe take away that little bit of a car park to slip away a little bit of, and it would create a lovely picture. It is very nice, and is as well as your picture of Ballyhaig as well. What I would do with the Ballyhaig one again like that, James, I just go in on each side, take away a little bit of the path away, and you have a lovely picture. I just like the cloud formation in that. There's lovely circles. It's really, how can I say, winterish day of the clouds there. It's lovely.
On a lovely afternoon at Camp Village, people enjoying a music session outside Ash's Bar. And this comes in from Moss Joe Brown. And a real traditional session, but outside, which is lovely to see as well. We have a piano, we have a harp, we have a guitar. And I don't know what the other instrument I can't see by the person's back, but there's a lot of different music going on there.
It's lovely to see it actually, and Moss Brown's great, like, you know, like he's going to the landscapes now, he's going to people and like that.
Yeah.
What I might do, Moss, is just maybe if you came around the front a little bit, because looking at it, if that goes to print, a lot of the lines are up, a lot of the lines are down, and people are there like that, you know, and you've got a lady there, she's slightly looking to the side. So if you came around in front of it and shot more into the door, because you have lovely windows there and there's sash windows there and all, but you know, that's a daily life picture. I love pictures like that.
I like this, Dominic. You're giving a few tips now today to kind of move it to another level because we are getting some fantastic photos. But I'd say people would be all professionals by the end of this if they keep listening to these tips. Good evening, Joe and Dominic. I question myself, how many more Wednesdays left in this month? Sometimes the best is in our own backyard, new school year, and I thank Dominic for his tips and encouragement. Two more to go, but this photograph taken on September 3rd is a start. Thank you both. Great item on Radio Kerry, first Saturday of each month. And that comes in from Agnes. And Agnes lives in a beautiful part of the world, looking across at West Kerry there from Kells.
Isn't this unbelievable picture there? If I had to tell anybody how to crop a picture, this is probably the perfect crop. The shape, how it's done, it's an upright picture there on that, you know, you've got the sunset and you've got the skies there like that. It's a great picture. I can't fault it in any way. It's great, you know, it's lovely, and it's lovely to see it, and it's a very welcoming picture.
And for people that wouldn't know what cropping is?
Cropping means that if you've got a picture, and let's say if it's a 10x8 picture, what you're doing is you're squeezing in the sides, you're cutting off the edges or cutting off the bottom, and cropping basically means reshaping the picture. But when you reshape a picture, you must reshape it to a printable quality. In other words, there's a ratio, there is an aspect ratio when you go to print things, so it's either 6x4, 5x7, 10x8 or whatever like that. So when you're cropping, just be careful that you need to think about the size that you're hoping to get it printed from.
Very good. Pictures taken of Carrigafoyle Castle and a ship going out the mouth of Shannon Estuary, taken from Bale Strand, and this is taken by Aita Hannon. These two photos are wonderful, I think. Aita has a great eye, doesn't she?
I think they're two, and just something, they're so contrasting. They're just literally miles apart in photography and how you take them. One is a sunset without a sun in it like that, and you can see the birds going in the air, you can see the ship coming out of the Shannon there, you can see the waves breaking there like that. There's lovely there, there's a great atmosphere in that. And Carrickfergus Castle, what a place to visit. It is lovely out there and see that. I've been out there so many times to photograph it, but I've never got a kind of a photograph that I really liked out of it. And I like this and that. You've given me a great idea for an angle, Ita, there and that. Like, that's the way to go and shoot it. It's nice, it's lovely, and the way the sun comes across the top. Great picture.
This is a real cute photo, this next one. Hi, Joe and Dominic. Love the show. This is my picture for this month. Don't forget your wellies. And that comes in from Nora Denigan. That's like, don't forget your shovel if you had to go to work. Don't forget your wellies. And this is wonderful. The wellies are upside down, kind of on spikes, or kind of, is that how they're kind of... I've never seen wellie holders like that. They're very handy because your wellies will dry out when they're upside down.
Well, I've seen that now. You see, I've seen it abroad, actually. Like, Joe, when we go skiing, we put our boots into a kind of a bar like that, and it blows hot air up into the boots to dry them out.
See, this is the city. This is the city man talking now. When we go skiing and we put our boots upside down, where I'd be thinking, you know, when we go to the farm or the bog, yeah, we'd have our wellies and we put them upside down. But sorry, Dominic, I'm getting to see how the other half live.
Oh, you had to get to digging, didn't you? You had to.
I couldn't resist.
But what you like? It's just lovely to see, because it's actually, it's kind of like there's generations there. You can see the adults' boots, you can see the kiddies' boots, you can see everything there like that, you know, and that. So I think it's a lovely picture. So it kind of caught my eye and it kind of tickled me. I said, that's a lovely picture now of a family like that, you know. You can see that. It's a great idea for people, you know.
Yeah.
Not on holidays, but you could do it here as well, Joe.
Yeah. It's showing imagination as well, that photo, which is brilliant to see. Good morning, Joe and Dominic. Find attached three pictures taken out in Dingle on the 9th of September 2022. The picture of the world's largest residential cruise liner, and it's in brackets called The World, and two scenery pictures. And this comes in from Deirdre Mangan. And Deirdre, wonderful shots as well. And this cruise ship is very impressive.
I think, Deirdre, you did very well getting the cruise ship, because it's an amazing ship. It was out there. That's been here. That was there a couple of years ago as well. Lovely to see it. And that, again, Deirdre, just if you look at it, Deirdre, it's like as if the cruise ship is slightly going uphill.
Yeah,
but, you know, I'm very critical of lines. I just like lines, you know, especially like when you're looking out towards the horizon like that. So it's very important, because when people look at it straight away, they'll always see the lines. Great, I love the sky in it. It's a great picture. That's the only fault I'd have from that. The people walking round up that, and the cliffs in the background, that's lovely on that. That's great. And you've got the pictures there. Then look, what you know is you're looking back over a landscape. There's sheep there, and there's houses, and there's a mountain there. The only thing, there's a bit too much grass in that. If you came up a small bit and turned into a panoramic, it would make a lovely picture. These are pictures actually that could end up in a wall, you know. They'd be quite nice. They're fabulous.
Yeah, and could you crop that photo when we mentioned cropping? Could you crop a photo when there's too much grass in the foreground?
Yes. Basically, what you're doing, you're going to cut off the bottom.
Yeah.
That picture there now, I'd cut off nearly a third of that picture off the bottom, and I'd have the rest of it then would be there. It'd be perfect to use.
Very good. Well, we've lots more of your photos to get to. We're talking, the theme is Best of Kerry, to coincide with the Radio Kerry Best of Kerry Awards that took place during the week. And if you want to email your photos, you email them to me, jmcgill@radiokerry.ie.
You're listening to the Saturday Supplement with Joe McGill on Radio Kerry.
Now, Dominic Walsh is still with us. This is our monthly In Focus photography slot, and we're looking at the photos you sent in to us, which you took the time to take and sent in to us, which we always appreciate. And now we're looking at Kay Fitzgerald has sent us three photos, and one is a beautiful kind of forest scene with a lovely little stream flowing there. The other is of a kind of an interesting looking outside of a window with the Virgin Mary inside, a statue. And then we have these archways, like it's like the inside of some kind of holy building, Dominic.
I think actually there's a lovely set of pictures, and Kay is one of the ladies that joined us to start and worked, and you can see the progression in her style of photography has completely changed, and she's really putting an effort into getting the best out of her camera. It's great. The stream is lovely, the trees are lovely. Is that an arch of a wall, or is that an arch, or a tree falling? It's absolutely lovely to see. And I think that's a location now where you get a picture like this, and you come back then in the autumn where it's getting, where the leaves are changing, they're becoming yellow and burnt orange like that. That'd be a great location to go back and take the same picture there again. And as for the statue in the window, isn't that a very typical Irish scene to drive past the house and see that like that, you know? Probably what I've done, Kay, is I think you've just gone that little bit too tight on that picture. You could have gone looser a bit. In other words, got a little bit more of the surround of the wall and things like that, and it just would have worked out a little bit better. And as for the arches, are they Gothic or whatever? Their arches are lovely like that, you know? It's great to see that there. And you've just got, as a combination of three completely different pictures, it just works and it keeps the interest going. So look, best of Kerry, they work well.
Hi Joe and Dominic, the best of Kerry is the people who supported Darkness Into Light this year. And this photo of Tarbert Island Road, lit by simple candles, winding all along the route to guide everyone. What a great kind of slant, Dominic, on the theme this month.
It is actually, and the best of Kerry doesn't mean a picture either like that. Even though this is a picture, it can be about people showing the best of Kerry and how people come together and have this light and the candles lit there. I think actually this is a lovely picture. Actually, it's a lovely picture. A picture like this would work very well if you're back down low and you've got a long lens and you can go along and train like that. If it's taken with a pretty short lens, you see at the start the gap is too great between the actual candles there, it makes it quite big. But it's a lovely picture. It's a simple picture and it just works. And the composition again is just an upright picture. The composition is the shape or is the design or what you put into a picture. That's what makes a picture is the composition, and it's lovely.
Excellent. That comes in from Brendan Cassan, I should say that as well. Hi Joe, photos attached from Lily Elvins. The photos were taken on our trips out and around Kerry, and that comes in from Siobhan O'Connor. And we know by now Lily is our young photographer that contributes to this programme once a month, which is great to see. And Lily has exceptional talent beyond her years, really, doesn't she, Dominic? And she always likes to do little shoes in the sand as well, which is kind of it's unusual and interesting.
It is actually, and the shoes in the sand, that could be very personal. They could be your shoes. You see some people there, they might bring a couch around the world, a red couch, or something like that, and they put it in different parts.
Or the fridge.
Or the fridge is another thing like that. Yeah. We've got a young person here using shoes, so it's quite dynamic, and you can see it like that, and you could have different colour, or use the shoes as a theme in it like that. You know, they're the Blasket Islands outside there, at their best, looking absolutely fantastic on that, do you know? And I think we've got West Kerry there and one there then as well. We're looking back on West Kerry there as a lovely part as well. Just great pictures, great set. Fair play to this young lady, she should keep them coming in.
Yeah, I'm sad and embarrassed to say that I've never been to the Blasket Islands, and it's something I always wanted to do, so I must put that now on the list. Have you been, Dominic?
I have been several times, yes, on that. Now, looking at that now again, I think that's West Kerry there. I got confused with the first picture of the Blasket Islands. Looking them there again now on that, and I didn't cop the last time, I'd say they're all West Kerry. But the Blasket Islands is a place to go, Joe.
Excellent. Hi, Joe and Dominic. Attached photos for this month's In Focus. And this actually comes in from Siobhan herself, Siobhan O'Connor. Ballyseedy Woods, Ring of Kerry, and Ross Bay Beach. And the Ballyseedy Woods is like something out of a fairy tale. It's just beautiful. And that is, we get some stunning photos from Ballyseedy Woods, don't we?
Ballyseedy Woods. Like, it's a paradise on our doorstep. It's just outside of Tralee on that. It's on the Tralee to Killarney Road there. You just go past Ballygarry there and turn right and you're off into the woods. And there's these beautiful walks. There's three walks. There's a long short and a medium walk there. You can walk around and see it's quite safe again. And to see these lovely scenes inside there of the flowers and the trees, it's absolutely fabulous. And those rocks, that's down in South Kerry, I'd say. You'd see that there on Kells Bay. I think that's on the way down there where they start building the rocks on top of stones there and that.
Yeah,
when
that's
we
right.
were abroad, you'd be given out, when I said that, but we were abroad many years ago in New Zealand, you go to beaches and these would be all over the beach. They'd be stacked high like that. Absolutely fabulous to see on that. And again, you can see Ross Bay down there and with the stakes in the water sticking up outside there. It's a lovely picture.
Yeah, and speaking of Ross Bay, we got another photo from Ross Bay again with things sticky out of the beach, and it comes in from Margaret O'Shea, but it's the sun is setting and it's just an amazing amber kind of colour in this photo.
This is actually Margaret O'Shea's picture of Ross Bay Beach, and it's absolutely not very often do I like landscapes, because I tend to say, I always say to people, a landscape is just a very easy shot to shoot. But I think a lot of thought, a lot of positioning, and this, and you've got a foreground, you've two timbers sticking up, and it's like two people standing there looking out, and it's like there's a timbers just at the edge of the water where the waves are coming in, and there's four there. So it could be interpreted, these are the parents looking at the kids running around to the edge of the water there. It's actually a lovely picture. People should make an effort to look at this picture now and see how landscapes and how sunsets should be done. It's absolutely lovely. The sun isn't too bright. This time of year tends to, it's not as bright as in the summer light there, and it's nice and soft and just dropping down on that. It's a great picture. I love it. And the composition is excellent.
Brilliant. So, humour photo of the month. What have you gone with, Dominic?
Now, you were giving out to me about my ideas on it and the stakes. It has to be the wellies.
The wellies
on that. It was absolutely lovely to see that. And it just draws something. It just brought a smile to my face. It's a nice picture. It's a family. It's a community picture. It's just a lovely picture. I thought it was absolutely brilliant on that. And that was Nora Nelligan. Congratulations.
Excellent. Well done, Nora Nelligan. And our photo of the month for this year,
has to be Ross Bay Sunset by Margaret O'Shea. I love it. It's an excellent picture. If I could get a picture like that myself, I'd be very happy.
Excellent. Well done, Margaret. Congratulations. You are our October photo of the month. I'm forgetting what month we're in. And Dominic, what is the theme for next month?
The theme for next month is autumnal, in other words, autumn colours of Kerry. And Marv's picture would highlight this on a big time read like that, you know, because the colours are starting to change, everything's starting to change, the blackberries are coming out, the birds are starting to trawl over the hedges eating the blackberries there. You can see the animals and the foxes, they're all going into these areas now at the moment. I think it's a great time of year. And as I said, pick your location. You know, if you've got this time for these couple of weeks and you've got a nice, like Cae Fitzgerald had a lovely location there, the lady in Ballyseedy Woods had another location there. Can you imagine going back out when you've got the sunset and the leaves and it's all orange and it's starting to fall and the leaves are gone, and take exactly the same picture? You could have the summer picture on the left and you could have the winter picture, the autumn picture on the right, and it would make a lovely picture on your wall. So that's where we're going to go for next month.
Yeah, it's absolutely, I'm really looking forward to seeing the photos there, because autumn is a beautiful time of year for photos. And it just strikes me how quickly this year is going, Dominic. You know, I suppose it's because we do this every month. But I remember when we were talking about spring and it being sprung, and our humour photo was the spring in the step, you know, which is, it's amazing. That doesn't seem that long ago and we're already into autumn. Jeepers. I have a few more questions emailed in and I'd like to get to another one now, Dominic, if you don't mind. Mary got in touch. And she asks, how close is too close? I presume that's when you take a photo, you know, when you go too close. How close is too close?
That is a great question, actually. A great question. The thing is, as I always say to people, when I photograph people, I put on a big lens and I stay away from them and I photograph them. Around your body, I reckon as a photographer, there's 6 feet around your body. If you want to go close to that or inside that, you should be asking for permission to do it. And you should tell the people what have you in mind before do it. So how close is too close? It's if you're pushing the person under a little bit of pressure. Like we all know it. If somebody's going to take a picture, be it a mobile phone or a camera, and you're staying, and suddenly they walk into you and stick it into your face, you tend to lean back a small bit. So how close is too close? I always tend to stay away. And when I'm going close to them, you know, I ask permission to go into their space. And people, once you ask them and go into their space, they welcome you in, and then you can take it. But some people might say, look, I prefer you to take a picture from a distance. Don't be upset. Say, thank you very much. I'll step back here and take it. All you got to do is change your lens, put on a big lens on that, or zoom in them a little bit, and then you get your picture there.
Yeah, that's great advice. Another question here. There used to be a program years ago, Dominic, I don't know if you remember, with Tony Danza, and I think it was called Who's the Boss? And this kind of has a theme of Who's the Boss, because the question is, who is the boss of you while you are working on a photo shoot? Who is the boss of you while you are working on a photo shoot?
Who's in charge, basically? And I like to think I'm in charge, but it depends on the situation. If I go out to do a picture myself and I'm taking a picture, I'm in charge. But if I go out and I'm dealing with a PR company, or if I'm dealing with a client, I have to listen to what they say. So at the end of the day, they tell me what they want, and I try and interpret that and come up with a picture that works for them and that I'm proud to be displaying to them or showing to them. So basically, who's in charge? As they say, who plays the piper at the end of the day would be the person in charge, but normally I would like to be in charge.
Very good. Excellent. We have a few more questions, Dominic, if we get a chance. And you also have brought your archive photos, so I'm very much looking forward to talking about that.
You're listening to the Saturday Supplement with Joe McGill on Radio Kerry.
Now, this is the final part of our In Focus with Dominic Walsh. Every month, you send us your photos and we talk about them here and we show them off to the county and the world. And they're there on the podcast, In Focus with Dominic Walsh on RadioKerry.ie. And Dominic's photos that he brings is up on Radio Kerry's Facebook page as well. The theme for next month, for those of you that missed it, is autumnal. So autumnal colours in Kerry. And you can email your photos to jmcgill@radiokerry.ie before the first Saturday of the month, on the Wednesday and before midday. There's a few, Dominic, that try to sneak them in after, you know. I've spotted them, so they have to be in by midday. We've got another question in here for you, Dominic. Among the photography gear that you've purchased, is there something you wish you hadn't bought? And why? That's a very specific question, isn't it, Dominic?
Oh my God, these questions. I know we're getting these questions from Joe. In a short answer, I'd like to say no. Everything that I buy, I actually need, you know. But no, I do buy things at time and in haste, and I think they're great. And you look at the YouTube videos, and they're amazing how they work on that. And when you go to use them, no, they're not so good. I've used these... and kind of, let's say, tripods that would have movable heads on them that you could slide around. They'd be great, but to find when you go to take a picture in a very slow shutter speed, they don't hold, they're not as tight. And I find that you need some simple stuff with the least amount of nuts and bolts and screws to tie in it. Like, keep it simple, and it just works very well. And I found that when I'm going out to buy equipment, I put a lot more time and effort into thinking about it. And I put a lot more time into researching it and know that if I am going to buy something, that is something that I can use. If I go back and look at the amount of stuff that I have a lot of stuff there that I had great use at the time and I had great interest in it. I think it's not that they're gimmicks, but photography tends to change sometimes. You tend to go for very, very slow shutter speed, and you can get glass plates that go in front of your camera that darken it down so much. You can do very long shutter speeds and you can get magnificent shapes and things like that. But I got all this stuff, but physically I just don't have time to do it. As a hobbyist, it is brilliant to do these things, but whereas when I'm in a profession like that, I'm in a rush a lot of the times, and as I said earlier, I'm answering to somebody else to get it. So yes, I have got a lot of things that I have no use for, but I meet people then and they're looking for bits and pieces, and I've got some stuff that I say, there you are, look, take that and use it and work away, you know, and they get great use out of it, and that's kind of like, doesn't make me feel too bad.
So you wouldn't spend your time surfing the web looking at new snazzy gear, the latest ModCon or equipment?
No, actually, no, I've not. Like a lot of photographers that I know and myself have gone mirrorless, and that's a camera without an actuation shutter in it, a shutter release in it. A lot of them have gone mirrorless. I haven't gone that way yet. I'm still holding on to the cameras that I have. I'm getting better use of them. I know I can use them. I will move eventually. But then I'm not going to rush into it, because I've learned by now that these things have their time to be introduced, they have time to work on, and take your time. And you really got to know what you're going to do to invest any amount of money now in camera gear. So you really got to research it. Yes, I do research, and I'd love to have a lot of things, but I have to hold back.
Do you know what I think is a great piece of equipment that you see photographers have, is the harness, so they can hold the two photos on either side of them. They can walk you around like they're John Wayne, but it's very handy.
Well, actually, if people see me going around, I have the harness. I have the double harness. I have the single harness. And I also have a belt going around my waist. And I have pouches around that. And again, it's like me going around a six-pack. People see me, like, they'll see that belt around my waist. My gear is close by. I'm probably tending to not use two cameras as much anymore. The shoulders aren't the best now for carrying two cameras all the time, so I tend to use one camera and have my lenses in the pouches. But when I go to see photographers and there's a group of us there and we're going, it's like fellas going out of the Wild West. They've got things hanging off their jackets, they've got huge pockets in their jackets, they've got waist straps, they've got harnesses. Like, it's unbelievable. You're looking at them, they're like a lot of fellas that are just cannot function without having all these things with them, but it does make life a lot easier.
Very good. Well, you heard it here first. Dominic Walsh, he's walking around with his six-pack, so keep an eye out for that. Now, the morning after the big storm, here's where we look at your archive. First light and not a soul around. Ballymullen locals were nowhere to be seen as waters have filled properties. Road closures and flood warnings continue to be in place across Tralee this lunchtime as a red weather warning remains active for the county until 3 a.m. tomorrow morning. Some houses in the town were flooded. When was this, Dominic?
I'm going to just get the date now for you there, Nanda. It was quite recent, actually. This was taken on the 6th of December, 2015, and it was very early in the morning. Very early in the morning, as the light came up and I was out. Obviously, people spent the whole night with fire brigades and everything like that, you know, and they were trying to allay the flood warnings around there. This is in the Ballymullen area on that. And the reason that I came across this picture and I pulled it out was, it's the real mirror effect.
Yeah.
There's a massive flood. Everything is there like that, you know. And it's like the wind, the rain, everything disappeared. And suddenly you go and you get this most amazing image of the trees reflecting on the water. It's front of the Munster Bar, coming out on there to the roundabout towards the Rose Hotel. And it's just full of water and it's so still. And it's just, I was there the night before on that, and the wind and the rain, everything was there the night before, and it just suddenly, like, as if it disappeared. And what got me about it was the tranquility, the peace, the quiet, and the fact there's nobody around. And I just came, now obviously there's cars passing up and down behind me, things like that, you know, on that, and there was a lot of people around, but when I looked into the scene, it was like as if there was nobody there, and everybody forgot about the place for a moment and just walked away to do what they had to do and get themselves sorted out, and this what was left. So as a picture, it's just, again, capturing the diversity of what happens. You go back to this place and you look at it, you never imagine so much water accumulate there. And it's a combination of high winds, high pressure, you've high tides, you know, on that, and the heavy rains coming down, the high tides come in, and it just fills these areas. It's happening now a lot. Like people yeah. say, global change. I just know this is since I was a young fella. These parts of the town have kind of had accumulation of large amounts of water over the years. Do you know?
Yeah, you'd feel for the people that live there and the houses there when you see that. But it is actually, I know it's kind of a weird thing to say, but it's a beautiful picture in such a devastating, you know, event.
It is, and that's the one thing that, you know, like when you go out and you take pictures of, let's say, catastrophes, disasters, and mountain slides and things like that, you know, sometimes actually you look at them and people look at it and say, oh my God, and they look and say, and again, if that was a video you were looking at, you would get a different impression. But when it's a still life image and you've time to look at it and you've time to, people start thinking about what they're looking at. They think about, oh God, the people in the houses, how did they get on? There's a car in the water. Could they not get the car out? Is the car destroyed, you know? You've gates open to a house there like that. You just see much, and people think a lot more when they see a still image as opposed to, well, I think anyway, as opposed to a moving image.
Yeah, it's a wonderful photo, and it's capturing a piece of history as well. And these weather events, they are becoming a bit more common. And I know during the Beast in the East, you got some amazing photos as well. So, yeah, it's very interesting to capture all this in the county. Dominic, we're out of time, would you believe? Where does the time go? But reminder again to give people a bit of a hint and inspiration for next month, the theme.
It's going to be Autumnal Kerry, but just before I can move, I can talk a bit about the last picture there and the water. If people are walking into floods, they need to be so, so very careful. Manhole covers could move, there could be drains there could be anything there. Please, please be very careful when you go into flooded areas like that. When I go in, I usually bring a tripod and I tap the water around to make sure that there's no potholes or anything there and that. Getting back to our theme, Autumnal, the colours that are there, please, please get out, pick your locations, get your pictures in. When you go out to location, take a picture of it, take a note of it, take a note of the time you were there, and when you're going along, keep your notes there, so when you go back, you know exactly where to go, and keep the pictures coming in.
Yeah, and you can email them to jmcgill@radiokerry.ie, and we love to hear the story behind the photo as well, so include that as well, and you send them to us before on the Wednesday before the first Saturday of the month. So you can be sending them all month, but as long as they're sent in before midday, the Wednesday before the first Saturday of the month. Dominic, it's an absolute pleasure as always. Already looking forward to next month, and I know you're a very busy man, so happy snapping as you go, and thanks a million for coming on and talking to us again this morning.
And Joe, thank you very much for having me on, and thanks to the listeners for sending their photos and the questions, of course.
The Saturday Supplement with Joe McGill on Radio Kerry.
Now, so we're into the second hour of the Saturday Supplement, and I told you at the start of the programme, you're going to hear some wonderful pieces now, documentary short pieces produced by the Radio Kerry Kerry College broadcasting students, of which Connie Broderick and I are the tutors. And first up, we're going to hear from David Nelligan, and David produced a piece called The Day the Box Was Seen by Jackie Brown, and the piece focuses on a tradition which used to run in Castle Island through the 70s and 80s called the Tops of the Towns. So enjoy this one.
Castle Island is a town of outsiders to onlookers. To people in the countryside, it's the big town. And to those in big towns a few miles out the road, we are the countryside. This sense of middlemanship has led to a particular Castle Island sense of humour. Often self-deprecating, regularly witty. As local great Con Houlihan described, Castle Island is not so much a town as a street between two fields. And this witty sense of self has thrived through the locals for generations. From poems and songs to satirical and often controversial St. Patrick's Day parade floats, taking national topics and putting the local flavour and spice to these. And this process of making art from the mundane world around was at a particular high in the town throughout the 1970s, when the Tops of the Towns competition was the main event. Kieran Fleming was a regular performer at the Tops of the Towns. He explains more about the competition.
It was a variety show, really, with a lot of singing, dancing, a sketch thrown in as well, and put on by different groups. In Castle Island, the groups were mainly confined to roads. So you had Limerick Road, College Road, Tralee Road, Killarney Road, Church Street, and then you had Cordell and Scatted Lane. They were the main groups. And it was started off by Father Leahy to raise funds for the building of a new community centre. They were deadly rivalry, like. They were deadly rivalry. Oh, I mean, the rivalry was deadly, like. Oh, I'm telling you. And some of the... Some of the judges weren't very popular with some of the groups, the losing groups. there was a lot of stuff said about them at the time, that they had been got at and all this, you know. Oh, dear. It was a fantastic community effort. It got everyone from these areas involved. Didn't matter who they were, where they were from, everyone was involved, young and old. So it was absolutely mighty from that point of view. Rehearsals took place in Nelligan's bakery. The bakery was an amazing spot, like. The ovens were hot, and there was plenty of heat there on the cold winter's nights. And of course, there was great fun. Unusual place. I don't know, was there any group in the country, or did any group in the country ever rehearse inside in the bakery? And often it was late in the night or early in the morning before we left it, trying to get things right. It was a great experience, and we had great fun.
A.M. to that morning or evening. I don't know what the A.M. At 2 a.m., the old age pensioners forehand ringing. And after that,
the competition was fierce, but the crack was mighty. And groups would look for any stories around locally to create a song or a skit out of. And sometimes, inspiration simply landed on their doorstep.
Castle Island Gardaí are continuing their investigations this morning following the discovery of a suspicious device in the town yesterday evening. They received a phone call at 11:30 a.m. to say a bomb had been planted in the telephone kiosk in front of the post office on Main Street. But upon investigation, nothing was found. A package was later discovered at approximately 4 p.m. by local postman Jackie Brown. The area was sealed off and local traffic diversions were put in place via Spout Lane in the town.
Only 16 years old at the time, Charlie Nelligan lived in the family residence on the Limerick Road. He recalls the events of the day.
It's about 6 o'clock in the evening. I lived on the Limerick Road and I saw the commotion. There was maybe a couple of hundred people in a circle at the Limerick Road end and Main Street. There was they were all around, in a circle around a telephone kiosk. White one was in front. There's typeprint of his pub, just up a little bit from typeprint of his pub. And the guards had people kept way back from the phone box for fear to explode. There was a box with a bomb written on it. It was like a shoe box. And people were getting moving closer to it.
Billy Dowling lived on the top of Main Street of Castle Island and remembers the day well.
The bomb that wasn't the bomb started sometime in the afternoon. We knew there was something up because the next thing the guards arrived and they closed off the top of the town. Traffic, pedestrians, the whole lot were prohibited from going near the telephone box. Everyone on the top of the town were delighted with the scenario because we all took our deck chairs and waited for this big massive bomb that was supposed to go off. The Cork Army Bomb Disposal Unit arrived about 3 hours later. Maybe tensions were high in Ireland at the time in the 1970s, so they had to take it seriously, you know, they had to really. And when the boys arrived down from Cork, there was all these army vehicles and all these soldiers were walking around, which was a thing that was like totally, you'd never seen this in Castle Island before. This, like, this was big. This is really big. The whole thing went on for about, as I say, about 5, maybe 6 hours that way. The local guards obviously were in charge and they wouldn't leave anyone near it. Everyone was wanted to get involved in it, so to speak. It was probably the best entertainment we had in the top of the town in 1973 that you couldn't actually get without any fatalities. But it was fantastic. It really was. And we enjoyed every minute of it.
The crowd's gathering got larger, as did the interest and the crack. But how did it all end?
There was a local character inside in one of the pubs. And he was trying to clear out of Ty Gein's pub. And he'd been there for a couple of hours. And he had to leave his pint behind him. And a bit disgusted, I think he rang up to the box and threw a kick at it. that was that, although I think it never went off. He did the bomb disposal himself and he was quickly removed by the sergeant. Other people said that the bomb disposal team set off a charge and two stones and a cuckoo flock flew out of it. It was fierce excitement altogether, but it finished up with even better excitement. People had a great laugh at it. But the local postman that time was Jackie Brown, and it was Jackie who actually saw the bomb inside in the front of Ty Gein's pub. And Jackie happened to be with Limerick Road in the tops of the town and singer in that music competition. And so they decided they'd do a little parody about it.
Jack Brown is meeting down the road of timber for our engine. How are you going to do it for? Timber?
My name is Nooley Keane. I'm from Castle Island, Limerick Road, the Great Limerick Road, and a daughter of Gaby Keane, who was a great parody writer, was called on whenever an old song was needed for an occasion. I remember Mam telling me about it, and it was an occasion of great excitement and great mirth, because very often the people that were written about were town characters anyway. So they were already people who brought a certain amount of colour to the life of the town, shall we say.
For hours, the whole place has been turned upside down, rehearsing for tops of the town there. And the crowds...
So this ticking box which was found. Oh my God, she said, I have a parody to write about. And it was going to be a song. It was an amazing occasion for sure, because I can only remember Mammy telling me about it and writing the parody. But she would have enjoyed writing about the characters, because it was always about characters. There was always characters involved.
Big feathered hat and blue pantaloon that he wears when he goes for a jog.
Sadly, I never heard it myself, but it certainly got great laughs in the town, because, well, after the bomb was defused, people got great mirth out of the story of the famous kick of the bomb and the ticking clock.
In the following years, Tops of the Tones competition, Limerick Road won it outright.
Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the Limerick Road Group, I have great pleasure in thanking all the people who helped us with our shows in any way. I hope you'll forgive me if I pick out just a few of those people. First of all, our musicians, in particular, Mrs. Kelleher, our music director.
And although Nuala never heard the song, the lyrics of the parody piece about the bomb hoax in Castle Island in 1973 still live on to this day.
The day the box was seen by Jackie Brown, the traffic came to a standstill in the town. The Gardaí took no chances. It could be from the Nazis. The day the box was seen by Jackie Brown, all the lorries were diverted through Spout Lane to keep the traffic flowing through the main. And then the final breakthrough, a ticking clock, it fell through on the day the box was seen by Jackie Brown.
I can't see any chance to get by the right to sing a song to shock the drumming, but we will have to give the train by slow enough because we know the two
drivers. Can you remember your lyrics?
I can.
Will you sing it?
The day the box was seen by Jackie Brown. The traffic came to a standstill in the town. The Gardaí took no chances. It could be from the Nazis. The day the box was seen by Jackie Brown. We leave it at that.
Supported us this year especially and given us every bit of encouragement that brought us to the final. Thank you very much.
Yeah, wonderful piece there by David Nelligan, and well done to everyone involved in that, and to David for producing such a great piece of radio.
The Saturday Supplement with Joe McGill on Radio Kerry.
Now let's hear a second documentary piece from the Radio Kerry College broadcasting students. This is by Jessica Gearn, and it's a documentary piece called A Walk Down Memory Lane. It's a dynamic piece which follows the journey both literally and metaphorically of two friends as they reminisce and walk down the laneway in which they were both born at the beginning of the 60s.
We didn't get dresses too often. Well, you did, pet.
Shoot.
You used to get a big package from America.
The odd one.
I used to be very jealous. She used to come out like a sunbeam, Ed. But we've still remained friends, haven't we, Pat?
In an ever-changing world, two women with a friendship spanning 60 years take a walk down memory lane. A small old lane in the centre of Killarney that at one time was their whole world. Within it was a host of people, tradition and stories that have made them who they are today.
I'm Patricia O'Connell and I was born in 1961 in Nurse Seymour's nursing home in New Street, and we lived in Green Lane.
And I'm Margaret Bennett and I come from Green Lane, and I was born in Nurse Seymour's. We were actually born in the lane. Myself and Patricia, we were the youngest born, we were the last born in the lane.
It was one of the real old parts of Killarney. My grandparents lived down there, my father was reared down there. I remember it as being very neighbourly, everybody knew everybody, everybody helped everybody. I suppose we were all the same, really. Nobody had much more than the next person.
No.
But you could walk up from the cathedral up New Street, up High Street, and you could name
everyone,
who lived in every house.
Yeah.
When we were young, we could tell you who lived in every house.
We could tell you everything.
Up along.
Yeah.
I can remember spending a lot of time outside, and I'd be going down to Mrs. Bennett, Margaret's mother, and my mother used to bake. Uh-huh. And do you remember she'd put the rock cakes out in the window?
She would. They'd be outside cooling, and we'd be coming home from school.
We'd be whipping them.
And our eyes would be wide open. The smell of them alone was enough for you to get the smell coming up New Street, wouldn't you?
It was a time when coming together and community were still at the very forefront of Irish society.
All in the lane, when I remember, we went to midnight mass at Christmas all together. We'd be all coming up, all the neighbours from midnight mass and chatting, coming up the street at 1 o'clock in the morning, and I can still remember that cold, beautiful, crisp air and the stars, and oh my God, I thought it was just wonderful. It was like a fairy tale, wasn't it? Really, like
Christmas was a big thing.
It was wonderful. Yeah.
I can remember my father, Christmas Eve, he'd land with a wooden crate.
A wooden crate.
And there'd be the few minerals and a few bottles of
Guinness
for himself.
Yeah.
And a bottle of Britvic or something for my mother.
That's
I can still taste
the lemonade.
Those minerals.
Great lemonade.
Oh my God, nothing today tastes like it.
No.
Killarney was renowned for its old stock, the old characters of the town. And as we take a stroll, we realise that many of them came from down the Green Lane.
There were so many characters in the lane, so many people in the lane that each had their own characteristic, they had their own individuality, they were their own person. And each one of them probably enhanced our lives.
Just thinking now, do you remember Paddy? Was it Paddy Whitty?
Paddy Fisher, he used to come down the lane. He had his horse carriages opposite
just
our...
Just opposite your house. Opposite.
But if you caught Paddy at the top of the lane, he'd be driving the jaunting car down to
which
the bottom.
Which was absolutely brilliant when you were a child.
Keep walking here now, Pat. We're coming to McLennan's. Willie and Neilus. Yeah. There were two lovely men. They lived together. They were two brothers. Neilus delivered bread.
That's right. I'd forgotten.
For Reedy's.
The bakery, Reedy's Bakery.
Reedy's Bakery.
Which is the very big pub now.
And Willie worked alongside my father in the cathedral. My father wasn't good with his hands. He really wasn't. My mother's called Willie down to do all the things, you know, hang a picture or something like that because...
He was the handyman in the lane.
My father used to give blood and he gave the blood twice a year without fail every year. And this day anyway, it was the time of the letter bombs in Ireland and my mother got a box in the door. And when it was shaking, it made a noise. Oh, my mother said, will someone go up for Willie, quick? I think I'm after getting a letter bomb. Letter bomb. Willie came down. Willie was the bomb detonator.
Amongst his other jobs.
Well, anyway, when they opened the bloody box, out came a gold pen for my father for
His years of donation.
And there was two more to follow, so there was two more letter bombs put through and it was brought up two more times.
If we walk on then.
Okay, you have Mrs. Mennix.
Ah, that's right, Mrs. Mennix and your mother used to always put out a beautiful altar for the Corpus Christi parade.
She put on
she put out
a big show for the Corpus Christi.
That time, all up the town, you'd start below at the cathedral all the kids that made their communion, you'd all meet at school with their outfit on.
So the Corpus Christi was a big deal, wasn't it? It was massive.
Oh my God. You'd really look forward to it because it was a chance. We were only children. We probably didn't really get there.
Did we got a new dress?
We did.
Always and ever.
And it was huge.
It was huge.
I mean, everyone, it'd take half an hour to go up the street.
Oh, it would, Our house had a porch.
Your mother used to have a big statue.
And the porch used to face up the lane. So
when you looked from the top of the lane down, you could see your front door.
My mother had a life-size statue behind Grandad's bed upstairs. That was his place, like that was his room. And when the Corpus Christi procession would be due, yeah, the day before, whatever help was available, the statue would have to go out my bedroom window. And there was a ladder up to the port, so someone would have to be on the ladder trying to catch him. And God forbid if he ever fell, because you wouldn't hear the end of it.
With today's flat screens, Wi-Fi connected, Bluetooth televisions, iPads, smartphones, and every other modern day gimmick, it's hard to imagine what it was like for those first pioneers experiencing watching the box for the very first time.
I remember your house. Your mother was one of the first in the lane.
To get a television set.
Yeah, we got a television.
And O'Brien's. No one else had a television
My
set.
My father rented it from O'Brien's up in High Street.
Yeah, but sure, everyone rented it. Nobody bought a TV back then. No one had the money.
And everyone would be looking in the window. And a few of the old neighbours. Your mother would line the chairs
My
up in
mother
front of the TV.
Would line. Do you remember? The chairs lined up.
They'd be lined just like the cinema.
You see, in those days, like, my mother would be, you know, she'd all come up with, there's a programme on tonight or whatever, right? So they'd all be up. And I can still remember it now. My mother would make corny bread, and there'd be TV made at 9 o'clock, and all the bread would be handed out in plates, or if there was biscuits or apple tart, to be all handed out in the interval, as they'd call it, or whatever, right? But Sean Mora was the tallest man in the lane. He was about 7 foot tall, and Hannah was about 4 foot tall, and they were husband and wife.
Okay.
And they come, and they used to sit at the back because no one could see anything if Sean sat
right,
in the front,
in the back,
so
bro.
He was sat in the back.
And I mean, that wasn't a big room. I mean, if you think back, these were small
houses.
They
were small rooms.
Small
right?
rooms.
But Nan and Granda headed it. They were up in the top, and my grandfather was front row. He was kind of custodian of it, you know, as you'd say, because
there was no remote then.
No, but there was
one of us with the remote go up there and turn it up.
If there was, like, if there was gunfighting, if there was a Western, there'd be a fierce night, there'd be more than bread put out, there'd be biscuits. But if there was a Western and gunfight, guns firing, Sean Moore would run out.
He'd run out. My father told him about that, and or that he'd be pointing back at the screen shooting.
And then, you know, all that, they were afraid the races, if there was horses, Sean had run out. If there was anything coming towards him, the television, Sean has head for the door. And my grandfather would have sit down, Sean, and have the essential to the television, you know, he can't come out. But then my grandmother, when Granda died, you know, my grandmother would be sitting in front of the television, and she adored Charles Mitchell. Do you remember Charles Mitchell at the news?
First, the headlines. The television service Telefisheren was inaugurated this evening at 7 o'clock by an Tochteran Eamon de Valera.
We all adore Charles Mitchell.
And
lovely voice.
When Charles Mitchell would smile, when he'd smile, say goodnight, Nan would be in the front. Goodnight now, sir. And I should be talking back to him. Goodnight, sir. Goodnight. Goodnight. And then in the summer, if we shot some, you know, or whatever,
yeah,
when we were young, Eileen and Margaret, will you ever cover your legs? The Pope is on. Will you ever cover up a small bit of girlings? The Pope, there was a mess starting on the television, cover up there now. But anyway.
Visits to the doctor were, it seems, quite a luxury at the time also.
My grandfather was never at a doctor in his life. He was never at anyone in his life. And I suppose there was a certain innocence, like they just did their work and they played cards at night and they'd be set dancing behind my grandfather's house and all that. He smoked a pipe. He smoked a pipe, my grandfather, all his life. So he was getting a bit shortness of breath. And he went over to Tralee in those days. Imagine he went over in the horse and cart to Tralee
Hospital. Yeah.
And he came back and he came in and my mother was making the tea. And she looked out and he was sitting in the chair and he was rubbing this thing all over his face and into his chest and everything. And she said, oh, she said, what's that? Oh, he said, she gave me this. He wrote it out. She said, he gave me this and he told me to rub it into my chest 3 times a day. Jesus Christ, is my mother. Isn't that the prescription? You'll have it all rubbed off. Isn't she? That's a prescription. So that's a piece of paper rubbing into your chest.
Many things have changed since their childhood. But it's clear that the one thing that has remained constant and unchanging is their enduring friendship.
I suppose it's one of the few lanes in town, Margaret, that's still untouched. And I hope it stays that way, because it's just its own little piece of
I would
old
like
Killarney.
I would like to think so. The very minute you walk down that lane, you're transported straight away, aren't you?
Yeah.
At that time, like.
Yeah.
You can almost see the people coming out their doors to you.
Even when we moved out of the lane, I was always up and down the lane. Even after, when I got married and had my own kids, I'd always call
down to us.
To Mrs. Bennett.
We always sought each other out. We always had that connection, hadn't we, really?
That's true.
Yeah.
And, you know, the lane was always a bit of our childhood. Do you
it
know?
Was, it was.
And I hope it stays that way, because it's just its own little oasis in town.
Yeah, it's amazing what a little small piece of Killarney can do to recall all those wonderful stories and memories. Charming piece there put together by Jessica Guerin. Well done to Jess on that.
You're listening to the Saturday Supplement with Joe McGill on Radio Kerry.
Now we're going to hear another piece by the Radio Kerry, Kerry College broadcasting students. This time it's Leila Fenton, and this is a wonderfully crafted piece, so you're going to enjoy this. It's called The Place I Now Call Home.
3 years ago I came to live in South Kerry. I'd been to visit many times, but to live in a place is to know it in a very different way. I came seeking refuge from a large city that I'd loved most of my life. Now it was a place where I couldn't even hear myself think anymore. Very few people make the leap to a completely new place as I did. In Kerry, incomers are called blow-ins. I like that term. It makes it sound like seeds that have been blown in on the wind. Some species are more native than you think.
My name is Maureen Sheehan, but I was no Shay, which goes down well in Kerry. My dad was a Kerry man, and he was from mid-Kerry. He was from Duke's Mountain, as they call it, which is not really a mountain. It's just like a little rise, a little hill near Cloraglen, in Cloraglen Parish. And he went to school in Cremond, and he went to England in 1947. He was born in 1920. He was a chippy, a carpenter, a master carpenter, in fact, because my grandfather was a master carpenter. He was the coffin maker around Duke's Mountain, and my dad sort of served under him and became a carpenter. And that's what he did when he was in England, working on the buildings, really. The area we lived in, East London, was just full of Irish people that had immigrated at the time. And I often used to say to Dad, when we used to come to Kerry, like, Dad, Kerry is so beautiful, so wonderful. Do you know, like, why did you leave? Because to me, smoky London was just like the pits. And he'd say, well, there was nothing here. We had to leave. There was no life, no prospect of anything. There were loads of them over there, so loads of Irish people and loads of people from Kerry and loads of people from mid-Kerry and South Kerry. And the meeting place was always, you know, the pub at the end of the week. And he always used to say he met more people that he went to school with in London than he did anywhere else, because there were so many people from different parts, and if you were found people from Kerry, you sort of naturally were drawn towards them. And I suppose in a way that influenced our growing up, because we always knew when we met people where they were from, Valentia Island or Glenbay or Castlevine. Or
so growing up, what kind of summer holidays did you have, and did you come to Kerry?
We used to come quite often and just loved coming. And most of the people, because we lived in a community that was everybody's, like, it was a big Catholic community. There was a lot of Catholic Irish. The Irish people especially were always talking about going home. So I always used to think everybody went home for the summer holidays until I realised, you know, it wasn't. When I think about it now, I think it was more just like an adventure, because we went to Dad's home place in Dukes. You know, there was no central heating or anything like that. Water was collected in a tub outside the door. My aunt cooked on a range with just, you know, the big pots with turf on it. And, I mean, the food was very similar because, you know, Mum would cook bacon and cabbage for Dad because that was the Irish way. You just kept the same thing going. So we'd run down with my Uncle Tig and we'd go and collect the potatoes and out of the ground and cut a cabbage. And, you know, there's pictures of us up on tractors and up on, you know, there was a lot of horse and cart and doing the hay, forking the hay and all of that. When we were younger and the farm was bigger and there were more of Dad's brothers and sisters alive, a lot of them didn't marry. There were turkeys on the farm, they had an orchard. So every Christmas, a turkey would arrive over in a box. I don't think you could do that now. And it would be one of the turkeys we'd seen in the summer, probably. And my mum would, eyes would go to heaven that this smelly box had arrived, and she knew what was in it. And there was this turkey that she was supposed to cook for Christmas. Now, Dad would be delighted it came from home, but Mum thinking, for God's sake, you know. It was just lovely. It was like an adventure.
Do you feel Irish?
Yes, I think I do. I think your childhood memories are a big part of you. Even though I have an English accent and everything, I would never ever go back. I love it here and love the people here.
In Landish
The neighbourhood I live in is a townland called Killegertine on the north shore of Loch Carron. It's a quiet place, but there's still always someone to talk to. My neighbour Donal is in his 80s and was born in the house he still lives in. Sitting on a wall on a windy day, he recalls the family farm.
I was farming as well, yeah.
What sort of things did you have on the farm?
We had mostly cows and beef cattle, and planting potatoes and turnips and oats for to feed them in the winter, and fodder beet and all that kind of things, cutting turf. And I cut cattle from here to Caherstavine to sell them in the summertime. I used to walk them in.
Used to walk them in?
Yeah, yeah.
So you used to walk all the cattle from Killegertine to Caherstavine?
Yes.
That's a long way with
it
cattle.
It was, we used to leave about 3 o'clock in the morning and land in about 8 o'clock in the morning then.
And then you'd walk them into the mart?
There'd be no mart, only a fair that time, stand them on the street or up in the fair field.
Oh, on the fair field.
And the street as well.
And on the street as well.
Yeah.
And was it one particular day?
It was the 1st of September was it, and the 28th of October were two big fair days.
Sometimes I feel a sadness that I'll never truly belong to the community I live in, as Donal does. Still always a blow-in. but the kindness shown to me by my neighbours, like him, lets me know that there are different kinds of belonging. The hedgerows where I live are the most beautiful I've ever seen. I like to paint them sometimes, and even though I'm not very good, I keep at it because it teaches me to look at the landscape more closely. Helen Richmond is an artist who lives near the old creamery outside of Carsfeen. She came to Kerry from Dublin 30 years ago. After dinner, we often talk about the connection we both have to the land.
So where should I sit if I'm going to be looking out the window while I'm talking?
Can you... you can sit where...
Cuddle up.
Yeah, that's absolutely...
And then mind my head.
As I said, I'm going to be talking in this piece a bit about the landscape. And I've always been interested in how an artist looks at a landscape and what it is they're trying to capture. So what it is that you're trying to capture when, as a painter, you look at the landscape.
Okay. Well, it probably has changed a lot as I've been an artist. But I think it's interesting that one of the first things that you said there was how you look at it and how you capture it. And I suppose what I would feel about it is that it's how I be in the landscape and how, like, I talk with the landscape or dialogue with it, which I suppose is a different approach from the start. So, like, what I like to do very much is go out and actually sit in the landscape and sit quietly and let the landscape impact on me and almost like give me permission as to what it wants me to do.
So you feel that the landscape in a way is talking to you and informing you
all the time
of what it wants to have conveyed.
Yeah. When I walk out into the landscape, it's like walking into a library, like a books and books and books full of knowledges of all different types. And what it requires you to do is just to sit quietly and absorb all those things.
And what do you think that being in nature, so immersed in it, does for humans, does for the people here?
Well, I think or feel both that this is like a thing that has been more growing on me, that I'm not sure you can really love or learn to love unless you love nature, unless you have the ability to love nature.
It leaves me with some powerful food for thought. You can't really love unless you know how to love nature. I think there's a lot of truth in that. Perhaps the person who most sums up my own relationship to the land is Claire Horgan, a local Shannos singer. This song is about the River Inny, just up the road from where I live.
'Tis far away I am today from scenes I love so dear, scenes of joy and beauty, to me for many's the year, scenes of sport and splendour that I boast of now with pride.
We're sitting on a bank of sand overlooking Ballinskellig's Bay.
I suppose whenever I'm here, I've been here in dark times of, like, dark skies and the negative side of lack of kind of stimulation and lack of just brightness and long days, and I've ended up escaping, either mentally or actually, out of the place. Very quickly I find myself just talking incessantly about home and about how amazing it is and boring everybody with endless photographs, like an ambassador. So obviously I grew up, like Sigerson Clifford says, skin to skin with the earth. So I suppose the landscape for me is, it's kind of your enemy in some ways, like the weather, it can be your enemy. The darkness, the cold, the wind, But then it's kind of your friend. It's like you, it nurtures you, heals you, and it's kind of a leveler. Everyone's being battered by the same wind. Everyone's being rained on the same kind of ferocity. So I suppose I love it when I'm here, then I'm very linked into it. When I'm away from it, especially when I went away teaching for a few months in East London, I was just horrified. The sheer amount of concrete. I thought, how can anyone live in this amount of concrete? And of course I came home and it had been raining and all the ditches leading up to my house were just alive with orange and red and overgrown. And I thought, wow, you know, beautiful. Yeah, I mean, you can just talk forever about the scenery and then how much it changes. I went from living in the Middle East and Paris to, and London, to living in Ballinskellig. And it really was like nothing happened. Nothing happened. And it was in that space that I kind of started to heal. And I think you need that utter and complete lack of anything happening in order for something positive to rush into. Of course, things are happening, but you would be forgiven for thinking they're not.
And that's the thing I treasure so much in Kerry. Things appear not to be happening, but the space and stillness that living here brings allows you to hear your own thoughts. Some people find the slow pace of life difficult to bear. For me, it's a godsend. I can honestly say that Kerry, the place I now call home, is the most beautiful place I've ever lived in.
Yeah, well done to Leela Fenton there. Such lovely variety as well. And I suppose it shows the diaspora and the people that have moved here and moved away as well. And the love of place and the sense of place in that piece is palpable. So well done to Leela on that.
You're listening to the Saturday Supplement with Joe McGill on Radio Kerry.
Now, we're quickly coming to the end of the programme. Before we finish, there's a few things I want to remind you about. There's a very special evening, a gathering for Kevin Griffin, an evening of poetry, storytelling and song at St. Michael's Church, Evera Road, Glaughlin, on October 14th at 7 p.m. And all are welcome to bring a poem, one's own or one of Kevin's, or a memory to share at the open mic session. And it was Kevin's daughter that actually let me know about that, Carrie. So I'm hopefully going to make it there myself, because it will be an absolutely fantastic evening in memory of a very talented man. A lot of people would have known him as a teacher as well, but I knew him through Radio Kerry, and I had the privilege of interviewing him for In Conversation as well. And a very friendly, knowledgeable and humorous man as well. So I'm sure there's going to be some fantastic memories being told that evening. So I can't wait for it. But it's on October 14th, 7 p.m. at St. Michael's Church, Evera Road, Glaughlin. So make sure if you can to make that, because he deserves a big turnout for the evening. His poetry collection, Holding Salamander, has pride of place on my bookshelf. Now, also, following on from the successful inaugural walking festival last year, Visit Waterville have decided to add more exciting walks to their itinerary this year for walkers of all levels. This, of course, I'm talking about the Waterville Walking Weekend, which is taking place from the 14th to the 16th of October. And for anyone interested in hill walking while exploring the vista of Southwest Kerry, and of course having some fun along the way, this is for you. Lots of family fun and different things involved there as well. So you can either visit waterville.ie, or you can go along to Eventbrite and search for Waterville Walking Weekend, and we wish him the best of luck with that. That's it for this morning's programme. My thanks to everyone who contributed, and to you for tuning in, and also Abigail Bernard, who was on sound.